You're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Looseheads podcast.
So hello everyone and welcome to the latest instalment of the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with me, Chris Hill. And it's the first podcast of 2021. So happy new year to you all. Hope you had a good Christmas as well. But I'm not sure whether we're going to call this series three with it being the start of a new year, but I'll let three people far more important than me decide that important detail. So it's happy new year to Rob, Mark and Dave, who are of course joining me on today's Looseheads podcast. So gents, we managed to have a little catch up before Christmas. So how were the festivities for you?
Yeah, good, thanks. As good as they can be, I guess, in the current situation.
Good stuff. And what I want to get you on, Rob, straight away, really, was kind of looking back at 2020 before we kick off the podcast for 2021, because of course we've all had challenges, we've all had difficulties, been frustrating, it's been stressful, but you guys at Looseheads have managed to navigate your way through it really well, and it seems like you've taken some really positive strides with everything.
Yeah. Firstly, happy new year to everyone tuning in. I think there's actually a fantastic debate to be had around what date it's too late to say happy new year. Perhaps we can save that for a different podcast for another time, but reflecting on 2020 as a whole for Looseheads, what a question. It's the year that we saw the most amount of growth, that's for sure. In a weird way, lockdown was the best thing that could have happened. People have taken a step back from their sort of normal routines and realised that maybe they've taken a lot of things for granted in the past. A lot of people have sort of connected with friends and family that they maybe haven't spoken to for a long time. And generally, we've been able to sort of help people realise that their mental health is just as important as physical health. Obviously, on the flip side of that, of course, it's not a positive in that there's still so many people out there that are struggling and are struggling in silence, and we've still got a long way to go. But looking at the positives for 2020, you know, Brad Shields took his beard off for Looseheads, Ugo Monya in the Instagram lives during the summer months, and we've been able to, you know, set this podcast up and speak to the likes of, you know, Sean Edwards, Jiffy, Pat Lamb, Dane Coles, Jack Berger, who are just normal people at the other end of the our new favourite friend, Zoom, or potentially everyone's worst enemy now. But yeah, fantastic year for us.
Yeah, really nicely put, Rob. Mark and Dave, anything to add to that?
No, a year older. I hope we gloss over that. I don't need any more years adding.
Good stuff. Yeah, I think Rob put it absolutely perfectly there. And he did mention the podcast, and we do hope that this podcast has played a small part in the work that Looseheads are doing, because the reason why we do it, as Rob said, is to continue tackling the stigma and raising that awareness for mental health. So hopefully by us speaking to some of the stars of the game, which Rob listed there, or whether that's media, that's pundits, that's ex-players, we're doing a little bit to help towards that. So many thanks to all the guests who've had on so far, and many thanks to you, the listeners, who have contributed as well. It's been really good to do this, and hopefully 2021 is bigger and better things to come for the podcast and Looseheads as well. So it's about time to introduce our new guest for the new year and our first podcast for 2021. And we're delighted to say we have Scotland international and now back forward Jamie Batty kicking things off for us in 2021. So Jamie, cheers for joining us on the podcast today. Happy new year to you. I mean, first and foremost, how was the festive period for you?
It was good, mate. Thanks for having me as well. Same as everyone, pretty quiet. Went back up the road from Bath and just chilled in the house. Had Christmas dinner in the house and came back down here. Also a couple of days off over Christmas, and the New Year period, we only had the one day off. So, yeah, not much done, mate. Just chilling, watching TV and probably eating and drinking a bit too much.
Pretty much the same as everyone then, Jamie. So I just wanted to get you on sort of settling into Bath at the moment. How's that move been for you? Because we know, obviously, it's a club steeped in history. And we were on the press conference this week with Stuart Hooper, and he got asked a question about you, how you were settling in. He's been really impressed with sort of what you've been able to show in such a short amount of time. So how has that move been for you so far?
Been easy, mate. Really easy. From start to finish, like, it was everything happened really fast. Like, from me leaving Edinburgh to joining Bath, it happened in a matter of a week. Like, I heard on, like, the Sunday it was, my agent got in contact and said Bath were looking for a Loosehead, like, short term. Obviously, spoke to Edinburgh that week. I'd left Edinburgh that week, and on the Sunday I was down in Bath. And since I've been down to Bath, they've been brilliant, like, helping me find places to live. And put me up at Farley House and stuff the first couple of nights there, and even over the Christmas period and that, keeping in contact, making sure for like for me coming back down and stuff as well, it was, everything was taken care of, and it was easy, mate, really easy.
From one wonderful city to another.
Aye. No, it's beautiful down here. It's a shame. I've been here, what, nearly two or three weeks, and I think I had one day when they were in tier two. So I couldn't even go out and get a pint or that or go for a nice meal, but we're in tier four now. But hopefully come summertime, springtime, it'll be able to enjoy the city a bit more. But it's beautiful. It does. It reminds me of a bit like Edinburgh, Bath, like with the streets and stuff. But yeah, it's really nice.
I'm sure there must be worse training facilities to be stuck at than Farley House as well.
The back pitches at Murrayfield, mate. Absolute wind tunnel.
Yeah, we know the winds up at Murrayfield all too well. Yeah, we were up there 2-3 years ago for my stag do in, was it mid-Feb, guys? And coldest I think any of us have ever been in our entire lives, sat in that stadium with about 2,000 other people.
With a nice warming pint of beer.
Which 12 or 13.
One pint of beer.
Nobody wanted to drink.
Yeah, no, Dave's absolutely right. The facilities of Farley House are very special. And one thing I wanted to ask you, Jamie, I was doing a bit of research before we start the podcast, and I think you did an interview when you first joined Edinburgh, and they asked you about the car that you turned up into and your first day of training. Was I right in saying it was a Ford Mustang?
Yeah.
Have you still got that?
I always liked my cars. Like, I've always liked my cars. Even when I worked, I treated myself to it. I got a Peugeot, because my brother, he used to have a Peugeot 106 GTI back when I was 15. He would have just passed his test. He got a 106 GTI. So I always liked the kind of old Peugeot GTIs, and me being into my cars as well. It was after my first year pro, played a few games for Scotland and that year, like, a wee bit money in the bank for the first time. I was like, I'm going to get a new car. But my house is in Glasgow. It's next to a Ford garage. And this is when the new Mustangs just came out. I was driving past, obviously back and forth for training, driving past the garage every day. And I seen this Mustang sitting outside. And it was the one I bought. It was a grey one. Well, PC. I never bought it outright. I'm not that kind of money, but PCP'd it. So it was a grey one with the black alloys. The 5-litre one, obviously.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, yeah, I might go and see this car to see what it's like. And so I went in the Ford garage, had a chat with the guy, and I ended up signing up and taking the Mustang on for, had it for about 18 months. It was just the Mustang 5-litre GT, some car. Like, when it was dry and sunny, it was, you couldn't beat it, but when it was raining and a wee bit slippy, it was pretty dangerous, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, you've not driven that down from Edinburgh to Bath, and it's no longer with you.
No, I got shot at it, mate. I've actually, when we hit the first winter, we never really had that bad snow, but it's quite icy and cold. I had it for like 6 months, and I was looking to get rid of it then, just because it's rear wheel drive and kind of power that comes through that thing. It's when, like I said, when it's slippery, it's dangerous. So I put up with it for 18 months, and you've got a car that size engine, you could fill your tank up 55 quid and you get 150 miles of it. It's not very good.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest driving a Mustang around Bath is the easiest thing to do either. It's not the easiest city to drive around, so probably a good decision, Jamie.
Hi guys, I'm Amber Reid, and I'm a Loose Heads ambassador, and you're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Remember that mental health is a journey, not a destination.
So we will talk about a bit more about Jamie's playing days and a little bit more about Bath later on in the podcast. But one of the reasons why I think Rob got in touch with Jamie over the Christmas period and leading into New Year was the brilliant interview Jamie did with Jamie Lyle at Rugby Pass. And it was kind of just detailing Jamie's upbringing and sort of his rise to where he is now. And Jamie, I don't know if we can just go into that a little bit more with you. And first and foremost, why did you feel like it was important to tell your story again and speak to Rugby Pass? Because I saw your tweet afterwards when it was published, and you said it's all about grabbing the bull by the horn. So I guess, is it about not giving up and staying true to your ambitions and trying to follow your dreams?
Yeah, it wasn't me wanting to speak out, like, with me leaving in, but I didn't want to be like, I want to do an interview to make everyone aware of, like, how I was feeling. Like, Jamie contacted me and was like, oh, would you be interested in having a chat? Like, were you leaving Edinburgh and going to Bath and stuff? I was like, yeah, like, no worries. And it just having a chat with him is just kind of how we're chatting now, mate. It just kind of came out through that way. Like, I wasn't planning on speaking out about all that stuff, but it just so happened I did, because just blaring away. Yeah, and like I said with my tweet, I was actually, when I was coming home from Edinburgh one day, I was listening to Ant Middleton's audiobook, The Fear Bubble. And he, I don't know off the top of my head, but he spoke about opening doors and like not being afraid of like different challenges. Like so many people go through their lives, live the same job, like do the same job day in, day out, and they have no change or they're, and they're not happy in that kind of environment. And that just kind of clicked a wee bit with me as well. And I was like, well, with me not being happy at Edinburgh, I want to leave, I want to do something different. Like, and I think it's important to do that. And like Ant Middleton said that in his book as well, you don't know what's on the other side of the door unless you open it. And that's the kind of what I was feeling with Edinburgh. And obviously the interview kind of touches on that as well, like how I was feeling being there and kind of what was going on and stuff.
And you say that obviously you didn't do the interview to kind of tell your story, and it was just the way that Jamie conducted it and how, yeah, how the interview flowed. But were you quite surprised by kind of the reaction it got then, Jamie?
I was, Like it kind of blew up on Twitter a wee bit, didn't it? but I mean, I've just been honest. Like, I was never out. I said that to Jamie as well before, and before he put the interview out, like I wasn't able to start outing people and talking bad about the club or talking bad about coaches. That's only personal, because you never want to burn bridges with anyone. But I was just trying to be as honest as I could in the interview. I think that's important. Like, you have to be honest, mate. That's what I see it like.
Yeah, definitely, Jamie. And just in going into the interview, and you talk a bit there, and you touched on it just then about kind of what you were going through with Edinburgh, and it was you kind of brought on yourself to decide to make that change and open that door, as you just said there. But was that kind of a culmination of things sort of building up, that you were going into training, you were feeling under pressure, and you just felt that pressure maybe building up on yourself a little bit?
It was. Like, I just wasn't happy, to be honest with you. Like, I joined Edinburgh from Glasgow, and I'm not going to get too much into the full kind of what went on there, but left Glasgow, went to Edinburgh, and I just didn't have the passion I had playing for Edinburgh that I did for Glasgow. And like I said, when I joined there, I was playing my best rugby for Glasgow at the time, playing well for Scotland, playing well for Glasgow. I go to Edinburgh and I just feel like I got kind of belittled a wee bit since joining the club, like I wasn't good enough. There was always something I had to work on or be better at to get a kind of fair crack. Then yeah, that was kind of it. Then obviously came back for lockdown. I spoke in that interview about kind of breaking down a wee bit when I got back for lockdown, and obviously spoke to the club post that, then kind of figured out where I was in their eyes after that. Then again, never got much game time. The kind of following weeks, I was like, do you know what? I went and had the conversation with Cockers, and I was like, look, mate, if you're not going to play me, you don't want to play me, then I want to leave. That was how the conversation went. Like, I'm not happy. Don't want to be here. Let me leave. And he's like, right, fair enough. So had that kind of honest conversation with him, and it went well, actually. It was never like me being like throwing the toys at the pram, like, I want to leave the club, I'm not being treated well. I just had an honest conversation with him, and told him how I felt, and I wanted to leave. So yeah.
And do you think as well, Jamie, just in the interview, you know, you go into kind of your upbringing and sort of the adversity and sort of the challenges that you were able to overcome and how hard you worked to get to that point. Do you think sort of those experience helped you kind of maybe knock on Richard's door and say, I want to know whether I'm playing or not, and this is now my time where I'm going to leave or I'm going to stay? Do you think that sort of built your confidence to go and do that? Because not many players would probably have the courage to go and knock on Richard Cockerell's door and say, I want to know, honest answer, where my position lies.
100%, mate. Like, that's, I wouldn't say it's my upbringing, it's just the person I am. Like, I'm not confrontational. Like, I go out and like kind of throw my weight about that, but like, I'm just honest with people, and I think it's best if you're just honest with me as well. And I've always said that to, like, even back at Glasgow with Dave, like the full situation with me leaving there, like I asked him, I was like, mate, do you want to sign me or no? Because I need to know if I need to look elsewhere. And same with Cockers as well at Edinburgh. Like, every week I wasn't playing or I wasn't picked for whatever reason, I'd be like, why am I not playing? What do I have to do to play? And I done it at Glasgow, I done it at Edinburgh, and it's nothing that bothers me to go up to a coach and ask him, like, what do I have to do to get better, or where do you see me, like, what's the plans? Because you don't ask, you don't get told at the end of the day. But it's like, it's never a confrontational thing in my eyes. I think it's good to have the conversations and be open and honest with people, like, I'd want them to be like open and honest with me as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I think we've tied it in with loose heads a little bit, Jamie. That is important to be open and honest all the time and do speak to people and kind of do share your experiences, because that does help, doesn't it? If you are open and honest, you are going to get to the answer and sort of solve the problem, if you like.
Yeah, I've been in a situation before when something is bothering you and you don't speak to the person about it and it just bubbles away. And that was probably one of the main reasons, but kind of post World Cup, when I got cut like the week before going to Japan, like I never fully addressed that with any of the coaches. Like I had a chat with like Greg on the phone when he dropped me. Danny Wilson as well phoned me the day after just to have a chat, but I never like fully addressed how I was feeling about being dropped. And that was probably always in the back of my mind, because like probably one of the biggest letdowns I've ever had in my life, busting your pan for a World Cup and getting to the last stage and not making it. Then obviously you don't address that and kind of it bubbles away in the back of your head, and you always kind of you look back and you think about it and it kind of makes you feel that bit down and that as well. So you know, you need to address these things. I think that's important, and I've obviously learned from that as well, like feeling like that kind of post World Cup and like even selection week in, week out, post selection you don't make it, go and have the conversations, get it off your chest, you get an honest answer hopefully, then I think everyone will feel better for it.
Yeah, definitely, Jamie. And you were, of course, a part of the Scotland squad during the recent autumn internationals as well. But just looking back at sort of your journey and some of the sort of routines you've had to get to where you are now, obviously in the interview with Jamie from Rugby Pass, it talks about sort of the job you had at the slaughterhouse. You know, you're working as a bouncer, you were training, you sort of the schedule seems unbelievable that I don't think many young lads would even dare to dream of doing to get to play in rugby. So when you do maybe pull on the Scotland shirt, you're singing the national anthem at Murrayfield, do you kind of maybe give yourself a little pat on the back to sort of realise how far you've come? Because it seems like, just reading the article, Jamie, that you never let the dream die, if that makes sense.
Like, it is special, but the way I see it, I've worked for it. Like, I wasn't giving it on a plate, do you know what I mean? I worked to get where I am, and I think standing there, whenever I have played for Scotland and playing like a Pro 14 final and that as well, it's like, I'm so lucky to be there. But at the end of the day, I know, like, I fucking work my ass off to get there as well.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm proud, and I'd say I'm more proud than anything to be doing it. Because I know what I've overcome, and I know what I've got through to get there. And yeah, I don't know what else I can put on that.
It's fascinating that, obviously, you know, that never say die attitude and never giving up. Obviously, me and my dad work on Loose Heads together, but you know, it's a separate relationship that we have as father and son. And just talking about that father-son relationship, one of the things he's always said to me is that, you know, growing up, that winners never quit and quitters never win. And it's something that I've always lived by. I've had different sort of setbacks in my life compared to you, Jamie, but just on top of that, you know, 7 years ago, my uncle passed away from motor neurone disease, and he'd suffered for 7 years prior to that. After being diagnosed, and so that hit me, because in a flash he had his life taken away from him. So there's the point of never giving up, but there's also that point of following your dreams, because you never know what's around the corner, which you've done completely, and bloody well done, and fair play.
But don't get me wrong, I was at the stage when I was working, like I was ready for quitting rugby when I was like 22 before I signed an academy. I was off in the slaughterhouse, and you kind of get to that, it was that kind of pinnacle year when I signed academy. It was either like, I need to get a career or I'm going to be stuck here for the rest of my days. So I tried to get in the police, got to the last kind of interview stage and passed the fitness test, passed the written test and stuff, got to the formal interview and absolutely buggered it. Sat in front of obviously two senior police, whatever they are, constables, doing your interview, and I turned up, I revised for it so much, had my notes in my pocket. It's all like, you're starting the questions, why do you want to join the police, what's the police values, all that stuff, and I kind of stuff like that, repeating it. So sat down, had a kind of informal chat with them for 5 minutes, then the interview started, and they're like, so why do you want to join the police? And I just sat there like that, I couldn't answer them, I genuinely couldn't speak to them. Then obviously, yeah, we'll speak to you soon. That day I got an email, sorry, you've been unsuccessful. But it was like the month following that, I signed in the academy at Glasgow. Like, But I always said that if I got in the police, I would just quit rugby and played socially. Then obviously it just it never happened, and got in the academy, and that was it.
It's interesting you use the word proud there, Jamie, because reading that article, you did go through some incredibly difficult times. You know, you spent, what you said the quote about, you spent one Christmas homeless, and you said you were actually proud that you went through that and you managed to come out the other side. And I'm not sure many people would even tell, you know, a journalist or anyone about that experience. So why did you feel that it was necessary to include that detail and say that, you know, you're proud that you got through it to where you are now?
I kind of mean the context for that we were chatting about. When Jamie was asking me about it, he was just kind of touching like my childhood and stuff, and
right,
like around Christmas time and that. And I don't know, mate, I don't know why I got speaking about it. But yeah, like, I'm not going into too much detail. It's just like absolute mum's working class family, and just so happens the place we were living ran up and never had anywhere to go. Got put in homeless accommodation and had to obviously move in with grandparents and all that, and obviously homeless accommodation and Alloa in central Scotland is not very nice, so you get put in homeless accommodation and mum was like, nah, we're not living here. So obviously lived with grandparents and stuff for a wee while till my mum kind of got till she got a new place, and obviously was in a council house, and it's the same council house my mum's still in to this day, and it's the same council house I lived in until 4 years ago. So I grew up living on a council estate, and I was living on a council estate 4 years ago. but yeah, it's just something we went through as a kid, and it's one of these things, I suppose. And
yeah,
I don't really dwell on it. It just shit happens at the end of the day. It's couldn't get a house, and so we ended up homeless until we got somewhere. Yeah, simple as that. And it's a horrible thing to say, but that's life, I suppose.
And Rob, I just want to bring you in on this, because we had a bit of a chat yesterday that I know Lou said are doing some work with homeless rugby at the moment. Just and tell us why that's important, that you guys have kind of connected with that as well.
Yeah, it's a good chance to sort of plug the work they're doing. They're about to relaunch in early 2021, and it's an organisation that we've sort of done a little bit with over the years. I don't think Greg would forgive me if I didn't mention him here. So they're doing great things to tackle homelessness. They're building strong partnerships between rugby clubs and local homeless charities to sort of create a positive sporting opportunity for those people. So yeah, a lot more to come from them, and hopefully we can support them on that as well.
Brilliant stuff, Rob. And I guess as well with everything, Jamie, at the moment that's going on in the world with this COVID-19 situation and all the setbacks everyone's been having, really, it does kind of put playing professional sport in the spotlight. It does seem such a privilege to people, Jamie, but it seems like every single day you turn up to training, you're just proud to be playing rugby, just listening to your story.
So, mate, like, I'm lucky to be doing this. I've always said that since signing professional. Like, even when I was back up in Scotland, like, your weekly schedule, you're in 2 days, you've got a day off during the week, you're in like a day, then you're in like a half day, and you have like the weekend off, or if you play the Friday night, you've got the weekend off. And I always remember, like, being back home as well, like, on your day off, you'd go out, you'd meet up with the boys, have a coffee, go for some food, and that. I'd just be sitting there being like, 3 years ago, I'd be standing graffing away, and like, there's boys like us that are out during the week, even like, you'd go for a few beers on, say, the Tuesday night, say, and I would never have done that when I was working, because you'd be up at 6 o'clock the next morning or five the next morning for your work. And it's just like, I've always kind of thought to myself, like, I'm so lucky that I can do this now.
G'day guys, it's Brad Shields here. I'm a Loose Heads ambassador. You're listening to a Loose Heads podcast. Mental health is just as important as physical health.
Mentioned before, kind of getting your academy contract with Glasgow, if that's right, Jamie. And you were 22 at the time, and this is no way to be offensive anyway, but you look at young players now who are 17, 18, getting the chance in the Premiership, and you may think, oh, 22, 23 years old is a bit, maybe a little bit old to get an academy contract. So did you ever maybe feel like it had passed you by a little bit, that you might not be able to make it in the professional game?
Before I signed my academy contract, 100%, like, I thought after under-20s, if you never got a stage three, it was called, if you never got a stage three after under-20s, then like, you're not going to make it in Scotland. But obviously when I signed it, I just put all my eggs in the one basket and went for it, and it worked out for me at the end of the day.
Yeah, it seems as well, Jamie, like reading a few interviews that you've done as well about kind of your amateur rugby you've liked with Melrose and teams like that. And I know one of our colleagues, actually, Gary Heatley, did an interview with you a couple of years ago now, where you went back to Hillfoot's Rugby Club and you presented a shirt to them and you kind of told them about your journey. Is it important for you always to look back on those times and those people, like a few of your coaches that have helped you along the way?
I still keep in contact with guys that I went to school with and played Hillfoots, and obviously when we could go out and go for a drink and stuff, if I went out back and stuff, I'd see these guys that I grew up with and played with. I'm still good mates with some of them. I think it is important. Like, it's nothing for me to go by if I've played for Scotland or back at County, to go and hand a shirt in if they want a shirt, because I know it means so much to a club to say they've had a player that's came through the system and has played for Scotland, and it's nothing for me to go and kind of show face and speak to the kids and speak to the coaches and kind of show, give a bit back that can they put into me as a youngster.
I think, Mark, you had something pretty similar with Jamie's international teammate, Hamish Watson, coming to our local club, Wilmslow, doing something similar.
Yeah. Wilmslow's best export. Yeah. To be fair to Hamish, he's you've played with him, Jamie. He's a pocket battleship, and he turned up at Wilmslow just to do some training out of the gaze of anybody in a gym. He just wanted to do a few lengths of the pitch, and as humble as he was, he then produced his number 20 Scotland shirt and presented it to us. There was only three of us there. It seemed a bit understated, but then when you watch a game of rugby, sometimes you're drawn to the ball. And every time I watch Scotland now, I'm drawn to what Hamish is doing. Jesus, he puts some effort in. And when he tackles, they stay tackled, as they say.
Yeah, definitely, Mark. But it's great to see sort of those players still going back to their old clubs and presenting shirts as Jamie did there. I want to ask you, Jamie, as well. I think you did an interview as well a couple of years ago, and you mentioned that you were still in the WhatsApp group for Melrose. Are you being kicked out yet? Are you still there?
No, I think I'm still in it. It's not been... Nobody's spoken in a while, but I'm pretty sure the group's still there, but it's probably halfway done my work. So I've got my phone next to me now. I'm not being rude.
I was actually, for the people who are listening, he's actually checking to see if he's still in there. I'm sure you're still in there, Jamie. I'm sure you're still in there.
I've no other notifications. I must still be in there. Group admin.
I'm sure you're still in there. And as well, Jamie, sort of when you got that contract for Glasgow, I was, again, doing a little bit of research about sort of the moment you got the phone call and said, yeah, no, I'm going to be part of the Glasgow squad. And it said that you put the phone down and started laughing. And I mean, some people may, you know, celebrate, ring the parents, you know, ring the family and say, look, I've got this contract, I'm going to be a professional rugby player. But you probably sat there and just tried to probably sink it all in and sort of realise what you'd achieved.
Yeah, I was in the house myself, in my mum's house, obviously still staying at home. I think my mum was out working, and I can't remember what day it was. I don't know, I was probably patching work or something, that's why I was in the area. But I was sitting in the living room, and Jamie Dempsey, academy manager, phoned me and was like, yeah, mate, you've got a 2-year contract at Glasgow. And like you said there, I was like, fucking hell. And I just started laughing, but I was like, I never started crying or that as well. I was just so happy. I was like, I've just got my first professional contract. I couldn't believe it. And that's just how I felt. I was just so happy. I was just kind of laughing about it. I can mind that clear as day. It was good.
Yeah, you touched on as well sort of the feeling when you did leave Glasgow. I know we don't want to go into too much detail about it, Jamie, but you've talked about it being bittersweet. Is that because of the way, as you just say, that phone call reaction, the fact that Greg, the club gave you the chance, and you obviously playing in the Pro 14 final, you're playing at Celtic Park. Arguably, you were playing some of your best rugby at that point as well. Does that make it a little bit bittersweet? It's always going to be a club that's going to be close to your heart.
Yeah, I did. It was tough leaving. Like I said, not getting too much into it, but especially when it wasn't on your terms, on my own terms, it wasn't me wanting to pursue something different or anything like that. It was literally saying nah, we don't know what to sign you, but Edinburgh do. So it wasn't me saying I want to go to Edinburgh, or I want to go to France, or I want to go to England. That's why I don't want to stay at Glasgow, because I was playing for Glasgow and I was starting for them, playing my best rugby. Then they're saying to me, well, Ken, we don't want to sign you. I was kind of like, well, do you know what I mean? It's quite tough to take. especially when, like you said, especially after you sign or they don't want to sign you, then you start a string of games and start a final and that for them. You're like, well, like, what's going to go on here? That kind of messes your head a wee bit as well. But it is what it is. I love Glasgow and I'm passionate about playing for Glasgow and I think I always will be if I get the opportunity to do it again.
But I think that probably sums up your mentality though, Jamie, because if someone in any walk of life, in any job, gets told you're not going to get a new contract, but you have to see out this one, possibly their motivation levels, their efforts drop. You had the opposite effect. You were playing some great rugby and you thought, well, okay, I'm not going to let this affect me. I'm going to crack on. Got the move to Edinburgh. You're still involved with Scotland and that was your mentality.
Yeah. I was during the Six Nations, actually. I was in Edinburgh training, I think. Yeah, I was. So I went and signed my Edinburgh contract I got offered and also went back into Glasgow post-Six Nations. I went, had a chat with Dave and Humps. I was like, look, I know you know I've signed for Edinburgh, but I was like, I just want to tell you that I'm here till the end of the season. So I'm not going anywhere till the end of the season. So if you want to play me, like, I'm still here. I'm giving 110% until I leave. And I did. And obviously, it paid off, got a crack and played well.
Just before we go into Scotland, I guess that's very similar to where you are now. Obviously, looking forward to being involved with Bath. Like I said before, we spoke to Stuart Hooper in the week and he was really full of praise with the impact you've had. So is that kind of, again, you taking a chance and not letting some setback get you down? You've taken this opportunity to move to England and play in the Gallagher Premiership?
That's it. Like, I'm here as injury cover at the moment, well, till the end of the season, and like, I've not came with massive expectations. I've not came down here expecting to start and play in every game. Like, I'm just here. I said that to Neil Hartley the other day. I had a kind of brief chat with him. I said, I'm just here to give you guys a kind of best version of myself. I'll give everything to my training. And if I do get a crack, I'll give it all I've got. And whatever that role may look like for me over the next kind of 5 months till June, July time, 6 months, like, it is what it is. Like, I'm here, and if they want to play me, I'll give it my all.
So you're enjoying working with Stuart and Neil then, obviously two players in their own right who had brilliant careers, both excellent coaches as well.
Yeah, it's brilliant, mate. It's good to come to another club. I know I went from Glasgow to Edinburgh, but to come down south and see how their training week is and just small things as well. Like, even the past couple of weeks, like the smoking, the fixes I've picked up, like with my scrummaging, for example, just working with different coaches around that, like Hoops as well. Like, I've never really experienced a director of rugby, like having a DOR, a head coach, assistant right. coaches and stuff. It's just a kind of full new setup, which is like, it's interesting for me to experience. And like I said, like with scrummaging and stuff as well, like working with different coaches and yeah, it's good, mate. Like, it's only going to benefit me at the end of the day. I'm going to be a better player for it wherever I end up next. I'll be better for the experience and that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, and hopefully that experience does get you keeping you involved with the Scotland setup, Jamie. As I said before, you were involved in the Autumn International, hopefully more to come in 2021. But before we get into Scotland, a lot of people may be drawn to your second name, and I know a couple of interviews have focused on this link with India, Jamie. I don't know if you can tell us a little bit more about that.
It's my granddad. He's Indian. So his full name is Jatinder Mohan Singh Bhatti. He's 89, I think he is now. Still alive. He's at a care home up in Menstrie. So yeah, he's Indian, mate. He grew up northwest India, a place called Ludhiana. I've never been. I'd love to go to India actually. But yeah, that's it. So he was Indian, my gran was Scottish. He moved over here when he was 18 to be a student in Glasgow and done teaching all his days, retired when he was like 60 odds. And he's been here all his days, so it's quite an interesting fact that you have Indian blood in you somewhere. I've got family out in Canada, actually. When I went on the summer tour to Vancouver, Houston, and Argentina with Scotland, my cousin, who's part like from my granddad's side of the family, actually messaged me on Instagram and was like, you should come round and obviously meet the family and all that, carry on. But I don't know what would be rude at that. I didn't think it was legit. I thought it was somebody winding me up. obviously spoke to my dad and that, and they're like, yeah, they live in Vancouver. And it was my dad's cousin, obviously, my granddad's, I think it was his brother, or he had a brother and a sister, it was either ours, obviously family, we were in Vancouver, and obviously they got in contact. I never met them. I feel quite bad for not doing it now, but yeah, I've got some Indian family across the world as well.
So definitely more excuses for more rugby tours then, Jamie. Hopefully India get a lucrative league, and maybe when you're coming to the end of your career, you can go and play in Delhi or wherever.
What's the real way going to play for like a tier two or tier three nation? Can you just rock up and play for them, or do you have to do residency?
Well, if you've got connections, Jamie, I don't see why not. And you mentioned those tours with Scotland there, and I mean, there's not bad places you managed to reel off there: Argentina, USA, Canada. I mean, what were those experiences like for you? But we know we talked all about sort of your journey to get to where you were, but where you are when you are playing against Canada, you're touring the USA, you're touring South America. That must be one of those memories which you look back on and you pinch yourself a little bit.
That was probably, so far in my career, that was probably one of the highlights that summer tour. Pardon me. Vancouver was amazing. Like, I've never experienced a city like it in my life. We were there for nine nights, it was, and we trained at the University of British Columbia, I think it was, and also the facilities at university across there are amazing. Like, nothing like it. Yeah. But yeah, Vancouver was something else. Went up like Grouse Mountain and stuff. It was so cool. Then also went on to Houston. Pretty cool. Went to a gun range and stuff down there. As you do.
As you do.
went and got some proper American barbecue as well. Had to do that. And yeah, then we also went into Argentina. Funny story, actually, we were leaving Houston. So it's quite a 14 or 16 hour flight from Houston to Buenos Aires. And they split the team up, but they put every forward on one kind of group. Then it was like the management in the backs and like the other group. So it was two different flights. Also, everyone flew business class. And so it was just the forwards, James Robson, the doc, and David Edge, team manager, who were with the forwards, and obviously Gav Scott and other coaches in the backs. So we went through this terminal in America, then our flight ends up getting delayed. We're in the airport for like 9 hours in Houston. So then Edgy was like to the boys, right, we might have to go to Miami for the night, stay in Miami, then fly the next day to Buenos Aires. And we're like, yeah, so we're getting right out in Miami, and the doc was excited in that as well. Then obviously staff were speaking and stuff, and there was still seats left on the later plane that all the other guys were going on. So sadly, the canned idea, I was going to Miami, and they shifted all the management out of business class, put the players in business class, and we all just obviously flew down to Buenos Aires. But I've never seen the doc so upset in all my life. When we got told we were going to go to Miami, raging.
Yeah. Hopefully you made up for it with the red wine and the steak in Argentina.
We went to on our day off, we went to this kind of golf course, and it was like they had like challenges on like longest drive. We never played around with like longest drive, like a putting green, stuff like that. It was good fun. And they'd done this big massive barbecue, and it was honestly about maybe 5 meters long, just on the ground, just coals and wood and that on the ground with just like grates on it. And that, like, every cut of beef you could think of was on this pig, everything you could imagine from this barbecue. And I would just bring it in this wee like room that we were all sat in, there's a wee band playing and stuff. And that's a good memory as well, getting a fed Argentinian barbecue. It was sort of amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree with Jamie on that one. Argentinian steak, when I went to Buenos Aires, is right up there with one of the favourite meals of all time. They do it well. It's funny that, Jamie, because we could ask a lot of rugby players about tours they've been on, and they'll go, yeah, it was special for the games you played and singing the national anthem. I love the way you've just talked about the stories there and having the steak. That's a proper rugby tour.
That's it, mate. That's it. The rugby was good. Don't get me wrong, we beat Canada. Then I got my first start for Scotland against the USA, and it was like 38 degrees heat, bloody 8 o'clock at night. We got beat off America. So then remember that for your first start. Then also we beat Argentina. But then that tour for me was like the good times I had on it, like with the boys, and like knowing you were there with Scotland as well. Like, you've kind of made it on a summer tour for Scotland, but like the memories you made doing that, do you know what I mean? Like the good times, the fun times I had on that tour rather than the rugby. Like, that's what I remember most, is like the fun I had rather than also the instances in the game, if I played well or never played as well or whatever. So
yeah, and I mean, and not many players can also boast, Jamie, that they played against Australia and New Zealand, if that's right in saying. And obviously, we had John Barkley on the podcast, which seems ages ago now when we did the episode with him, and he was quick to highlight that win against Australia you boys had at Murrayfield. That must have been something special for Scotland to get one over Australia in front of a Pat Murrayfield.
Oh, that was class, mate. That was a day to remember as well. Not only my third test, I think it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, came on at half time, and of course at half time, and they just absolutely hosed them in the second half. And what a night we had after that as well. And Brahimi in Edinburgh, I remember it. And Brahimi in Edinburgh, and it was just a free bar. Finn Russell was behind the bar making drinks and that, trying to show off as he does. And it was good, mate. I actually went back to Hamish Watson's flat that night. Some of the boys, I think Ryan Wilson and his dad were there at Hamish's flat. And I rocked back in the team hotel the next morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, my suit and that still on. Said to the physios, I'm all right, I'm fine. Went to my bed.
That's how it should be after beating Australia.
You're right, mate.
Well, we definitely need to get Finn Russell on the podcast, because that's Jamie. Hamish Watson and John Barkley have all talked about him doing something with drinks on a night out. So I think Finn would be great entertainment.
He's just a show-off.
He's just a show-off. On the pitch and off the pitch, James.
Aye.
And another memory which possibly was taken away from you was you nearly scored against New Zealand, if I remember.
Didn't bring it back, man.
Sorry.
I've never scored a try. I think the last time I scored a try was playing for Melrose. I'm not joking. So that would have been five or 6 years ago, was the last time I scored a try. And in front of Murrayfield, packed out, we would have been, I don't know if we were obviously behind, but it was close, I think.
Yeah, it was close, yeah.
Very close.
Johnny Gray went to pick and go. Kieran Reid slaps the ball out of his hands. I pick it up under the sticks, score it, and Mark Carley brings us back for penalty advantage. We had advantage. He brings us back for the advantage because he thinks Johnny's knocked it on. I was under the sticks, 7 points. Thank you very much.
Oh, you'll have to have a word with Matt Carley now you're in the Premiership, Jamie. Aye. He does have to do that. And yeah, that would be fate. If you score for Bath, he's refereeing.
Hey, it might be. You never know.
We'll look forward to it. We'll look forward to it, Jamie. Just to bring you back to a bit of a serious note in terms of your Scotland aims, you've obviously not hidden the fact that you're extremely hungry to carry on and making appearances. And obviously, Gregor was the first coach to give you that chance at Glasgow. I mean, what's he like to work with? And are you just, you know, keeping your head down and trying to get into his plans once again for 2021?
I think it all comes. I've always said that, even when I was at Edinburgh and stuff as well. And I think the Scotland stuff, for me, it's important to be playing as well for your club before worrying about any of that. Like, I just want to be wherever I'm playing, like, club-wise. I just want to be playing my best rugby for them. And if that leads to me playing for Scotland, then I'll be happy with that. But like, I don't just want to be one of these guys that just want to get through a few games and go into national camp and just worry about playing for Scotland. I really want to buy into the club I'm playing for and be the best player for them. Because at the end of the day, that's your main employer, and that's who you're playing for week in, week out, rather than worrying about that. So for me, it's important just to be playing as well as I can for a club. Then when the national stuff, hopefully, if you're playing well enough, it comes with it. So, but with Gregor, like, big respect to him for like the autumn test stuff there. Like, I hadn't played a lot of rugby on the lead up to that, and he also gave me a call and he's like, look, you're in the squad. A lot of it's coming down to like trust, knowing how well you have played for Scotland in the past. And he says, you'll be in the squad and just come in, keep training well, and if you get an opportunity, you get an opportunity. So, big respect to him for that. But
yeah, I think someone who probably shares that mentality, just looking back at his career, Jamie, is Doddy Weir. I think he, you know, played really well for his club and obviously loved playing for his country. And it just seems to any Scot, any Scottish player, any Scottish rugby fan, he's a massive inspiration. He's obviously been in the news this week with his Living for Lions video. You've probably seen doing the rounds on social media, but he just seems to be such an inspiration with everything that he's been going through as well, Jamie.
He's some man. We were at the, I was lucky enough to be at the All Blacks game, and when he came out and presented the match ball, and that, it was emotional, like seeing him come out, and he's, fair play to him, he's still trucking on now, and it's inspirational to see. I don't want to say it too much, but like with Rob Burrows as well, like you've seen how quickly he's deteriorated with the disease, and Doddy's still trucking on, which is good to see, and it's sad, but it's like good on him. It's inspirational.
Hi guys, I'm Sam James. I'm a Looseheads ambassador, and you're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Make your mental health a priority.
Now, Jamie, we're going to come on to your Will 15, your Mars 15 to finish off the podcast. The first one of 2021, Mark, it was an extremely, extremely positive reaction to the Mars 15s in 2020. So are you looking forward to kicking off 2021?
Yeah. New year, but old rules. So, Jamie, the concept is it's Mars have landed on Earth. They don't know we've got coronavirus. They quite fancy the rivers and the oceans and Vancouver to live in. So they've challenged the Earth en masse to a game of rugby to decide who owns Earth. So the small matter of the toss has been had. We've lost the toss. So on Friday, you and your team of 15 players, water boy, kit man, manager and coach, go for a four-week shuttle to play Mars away. And just going back to something you said earlier, when I've watched Jamie play, you look very serious about the game that you're playing. You look more serious than most of the other players, and you take it very seriously. And I think that background you talked about, being a bouncer, being in the slaughterhouse, is ideal preparation for being a Loosehead prop. So consequently, I'm really looking forward to see who you'd select in your all-time Mars 15.
Right, number one, Wyatt Crockett. Number two, Corey Flynn. Number three, Tad Furlong. Four, Sam Whitelock. Five, Thomas Lavanini. Six, Liam Squire. Seven, Michael Hooper. Eight, Kieran Reid. Nine, Greg Laidlaw. 10, Finn. 11, Isa Nasiwa. 12, Alex Dunbar. 13, Rhys Hodge. 14, Thomas Seymour. And 15, Bowden Barrett. Sure of good players and guys I've looked up to, like I've played against and I've looked up to before playing against them. Do you want me to like watch them on the TV and then get an opportunity to play against some of them? And there's a couple of tourists in there as well, a couple of good tourists in there.
So like I guess like Michael Hooper, you'd seen him, he's been around forever, it seems. He's not an old man, but you've played against him as well. And
yeah,
crikey, there's a guy who punches above his weight.
Yeah, that's like some of the guys in this team, well, no team that I've put down, but like Liam Squire as well, the All Black Six.
Yeah.
Growing up watching Super Rugby, watching him play, and he was an absolute animal, and still is when he gets back playing. And obviously, I played against him at Murrayfield, and this was a guy when I was younger, no, talking younger, I would have been 16, 17 at the time. He was probably my favourite player to watch playing Super Rugby, just how good he was. And obviously, playing against All Blacks, I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm playing against Liam Squire today. Do you know what I mean?
And an all Scottish halfback pairing.
Greg and Finn. Finn, because he's a good tourist, he's a good mate as well. good in the beers. And
before you get onto the background stuff, who would be your captain of that team? There's a few candidates.
Captain, actually. I'd go Liam Squire for captain. Just how highly I rate him as a player, I'd go for him.
Fair play. Yeah. And backroom staff.
Backroom staff. I went head coach John Dale.
Yeah.
Team manager John Manson, who's the Glasgow team manager. Kit man Mark Beals. He's the Scotland kit man at the moment.
Yeah.
Absolute legend. He came for Saris. He's a good man. Absolute legend. I went for the water boy. Just for a tourist point of view, I went Dan Bilzerian.
Brilliant. It's amazing how many people cite the kit man as being quite an important part of the team.
Oh, it's massive. Like, Bills is an absolute legend. Like, when you're in camp with Scotland, there's not one thing you want for. He'll do everything for you. Like, you come in the morning, your kit's all rolled up in a towel, like your shorts, your socks, your top, your training top, your gym t-shirt, everything's rolled up in a towel for you. And also, you go and do your training, come back, stick it in a blue bin the next day. The same's there again. He's got his wee area set up with like under shorts, under tops, trackies, hoodies, jumpers, snoods, anything you could want. he's got it sorted for you.
And that, that feeling of making a player feel special, you've got the unique experience that you've played at grassroots level, not so much grassroots level like we've played at, but you've played at lower teams than Glasgow and Edinburgh and Bath and certainly Scotland. But even walking into a changing room and have the numbers lined up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 makes you feel like there's 3 points on the board already. So I think the kit man just is a bit of a 16th man. I've always felt that.
100% agree with you. They play a big part, kit man. Like, folk just think they bloody put the kit out and clean up the balls at the end of training. But like, you sit down, you hear coffee with them, you hear a blair with them. Like, it's somebody you can just sit that's not a rugby player. Potentially could have been a rugby player, but you can just sit here like a normal conversation with the guy and a little bit of crack with him. Or, do you know what I mean?
And maybe,
the coaching staff.
And maybe even just offload about them, about the game you've had or the injury you've got or the whatever. It's just it's the sharing of a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Time will tell how the Bath kit man works out.
It's a great team, Jamie. And one thing that some people do ask the question, as you said, you've got a lot of tourists in that team. They ask about the nightlife on Mars when you go over there. Will you be travelling as a bouncer, maybe, to make sure everyone's in check?
I'll be there, team security.
Team security. I'm not sure what the atmosphere is like up there, Jamie, but it might be a bit different. Was it Dusk and Storm you were working at?
Dusk and Stirling, Storm and Falkirk. The Wellington Bar in Falkirk as well. I don't know if it's still there. And a place, Society in Kirkcaldy. That was good fun, mate. I got filled in there, actually, at Society.
That was good fun. I got filled in there.
One against bloody seven. Tell you a story, actually. It was quite funny. I was working at this Society and I was standing on the dance floor at a kind of side bar. And there was a big group of boys. And they're all steaming. It's one of the guys' birthdays. And the guy in charge is like, just keep an eye on the guy. They keep dropping glasses. I keep an eye on them. I'm looking over and I'm stumbling about. Next minute, another glass just drops it. And this boy's buckled. He couldn't stand. So like, I walk over. I look, mate, I think you've had too much to drink. It's time for you to leave. And obviously, him standing like a group of boys, it must have been his best mate, his brother. So I'm stood right in my face. And he's like, he's not going anywhere. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, here we go. So I was just like, fight at the side bar, and I just fucking cracked the boy. Then, like 6 or 7 of them were just sitting about me, just like bam, bam, bam. But I just never let go of this one boy that I punched first. I just kept hitting him. I was just getting rights and lefts everywhere off his squad. And that was funny. Made sure the one I hit got it good.
I hope they tune in to BBC and ITV during the Six Nations. And there's Jamie Batty singing that, and he goes, that's the guy. I remember him from outside the Wellington.
Isn't that that guy?
I'm sure there won't be that kind of trouble up on Mars, Jamie. And you've got a few good players in that team to help you out if necessary, but I'm sure you won't need it. But Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you on the podcast today, and it's been brilliant to hear your story. And I think some of the messages which Jamie has talked about there about not giving up and following your dream is absolutely important, especially during this tough time everyone's going through. And it's a powerful thing that Jamie's been able to tell us today, as well as the fun stuff about Mars 15s and tours with Scotland as well. So Jamie, thank you so much for giving us your time on the Loose Heads podcast today, and all the best going forward with Bath and Scotland as well.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. And just before we go as well, do check out Loose Heads on social media for the latest stuff the guys are doing. Some cracking merchandise which can be purchased at looseheads.co.uk at the moment, whether it's a hoodie to keep you warm during the winter months at the moment, or some training gear to keep you physically and mentally sharp during this lockdown period. But it's been brilliant to chat to Jamie. Many thanks to Rob, Mark and Dave as always.
Yes, thank you.
And that's been another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Loose Heads podcast.